at their proper places yet. We will, though, begin to take testimony and open a public hearing on...
Here we go.
Now we've got a quorum. We'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 262. And David Reiche and Jerry Henderson. Please, thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair, members of the committee. My name is David Reich, R-I-K-E. I'm the Director of Technology for the Department of Education. With me today is Jerry Anderson, the Information Technology Director for Medford High School District. We're here today to talk about Senate Bill 262. This bill provides the Board of Education with the capability to adopt the content and format of the electronic Oregon student record as the official student permanent record and the official student education record. The department has worked for over 3 years in cooperation with the Committee of Oregon School District Information Technology Managers, and Jerry has been our liaison and leader of that committee in developing and implementing the Oregon student record. The record is an electronic description of a student in a data format that is standardized for use by all schools and districts. And I can't overemphasize the importance of having a single definition of what a student is. It's like a student profile that all the districts can use. So when we talk about a student, it's understood by everyone. It's like having a common language here in Oregon when you talk about students. Information in the record, for example, includes the demographic information about that student, enrollment information, attendance information, health summary information, immunization, health screening, program participation, discipline, activities and awards, academic status, academic history, test scores, student benchmark standards, work sample scores, past proficiencies, GAM requirements, and special education. An electronic record allows one district to forward to a requesting district all the pertinent information currently required by law and necessary to enroll and place a student in the requesting district. The department has offered amendments that I believe you have before you from the that we have worked out in cooperation with the Archives Department to help support archiving this record when the student leaves. The department, together with a subcommittee of information technology managers, has successfully piloted the transfer of the OSR, the Oregon Student Record. The record transfer takes place over the web, utilizing the same up-to-date security measures used for internet banking. Adoption of this record places Oregon in the forefront nationally of states that have a standardized way of communicating information about and for students. The benefits to schools and districts include paperless transfer, since the paper record will no longer be required to be sent, timely and immediate electronic transfer of records to requesting institutions, more accurate transfer since data entry is minimized at the requesting school. A cost savings is expected to accrue over time to schools and districts since the transfer and record keeping process will be automated. At this point, I'd like to ask Jerry to talk to you a little bit about how this process works since he's actually participating in the pilot that we have right now.
In Medford, we have an...
For the record, your name, please.
Jerry Anderson, Medford School District.
Thank you.
In Medford, we have a fairly extensive student database that contains at least all of the information items that are specified as being part of the Oregon student record. We have written programs that will extract information from our database, place it in the OSR format, and prepare it for transfer to a receiving school in any other district in the state that has the capability to receive that record. It's up to a receiving school district to set up their own program, to determine exactly what they want to do with it, how they want to use it, and those kinds of things. When we receive information in Medford, an electronic record in Medford, the first thing we'll do is print it out so we have a hard copy of exactly what we received from the sending school. Then we will have the ability to programmatically input certain portions of the record into our student database. The immunization information, for example, that will save that entry time. So we're saving money, it's done efficiently. Test scores. We not only have test scores, especially the Oregon State Assessment Test, scores in the database for the student, but that saves time also. In the long term, the benefits of doing that is not only for placement, but a year or 2 years down the road, if I can print a copy of a student profile that contains information from a student's prior school as well as their current activities after they came to Medford, then a counselor or someone can look at that that academic record, assist the student in determining career goals, those kinds of things.
Questions? The electronic information is secure. You indicated that it has the same level of security as bank. So it's available only to school officials, counselors, you mentioned.
Right. Well, it's the transport platform is actually at ODE. A request is submitted into the system, which is based on the internet, the server, and the information that we're transmitting is stored at the Oregon Department of Education here. A school district would need to create a request electronically on this system that would go to the sending school district. The sending school district gets an email message automatically that says another school has received this student and they would like to receive the student's electronic record. And the sending district creates the record, inputs it to the ODE website, which is a secure website, and it's forwarded on to the receiving school that way.
Thank you. Any
Mr.
Further?
Chair?
Senator Fisher?
I guess that's safe to anything but 14 to 16-year-old hackers. But anyway, I just wanted to say that I appreciate this type of thing because in my business, the only place I've ever actually been able to maintain greatly increased record requirements and all that type of thing with the same staff, basically, and bookkeeping and all that type of thing and payroll is through the use of electronic equipment. That's one area. I've never been able to save a maintenance man by getting a new buffer or polisher or save a kitchen help by getting a new convection oven or something like this. We may have gotten better service and done better things with it, but never actually able to say. And in the electronic end of things, in the records, that's where I have been able to hold costs down and to maintain manifold more things, not to mention giving myself an opportunity to operate day by day knowing where I was at rather than a month and a half after the fact type thing like we used to have to do. So I think that these are things, and I appreciate the initiative of bringing that to us.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Gordley.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon, gentlemen. Mr. Reiki, what percentage of school districts in our state use electronic records now and or have the capacity to use electronic records?
Well, Chair, Senator Gordley, that let me break that answer down into a couple of categories. First of all, there are approximately 60% of the students in the state are handled through one of the 10 or 11 major data centers, of which Jerry's is one of those. So they have a fully functioning data center. The balance of those students, perhaps 40%, operate independently. So they have their own data systems within those schools. And then there is a percentage of schools a smaller percentage, that because they are smaller districts, some of them having 10 to 15 to 100 to 200 kids, sometimes they have no electronic support. They have perhaps a PC on a desktop, or they are taking care of their administration through some of your more familiar office suite tools. So what we have to do when we designed the system is we first of all accommodate the transmittal of the electronic record in a manner that is extracted from the large database systems, as Jerry described to you, but we have also accommodated the capability of a smaller school that perhaps has their kids on, for example, an Excel spreadsheet. They will be able to send that spreadsheet this same way, as long as it goes through the approval process that's described in Senate Bill 622. As long as they can meet those requirements, we can accept, for example, the spreadsheet, and we will in fact provide a web-based front end for those very small schools like Dufour, Powder River, for example, in the rural areas. We will provide a web-based front end for them to enter the information directly that they have about a student, which often they have in mm-hmm. paper in their local jurisdictions.
Okay. Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I have a question, Mr. Reiki, about the proposed amendments to Senate Bill 262. Could you help us understand the change that would be accomplished with the amendment? What distinction am I missing?
The archives had asked us, and they are here today, if you would like to hear from them. The archives read the bill, and we collaborated with them on the changes to 5B by removing the words "for record retention purposes," because they wanted it to be very clear that the electronic record is difficult to retain for the. This is a permanent record. So what will be necessary is to take the electronic record when the student graduates and commit it to microfilm or paper so that it can be stored for 100 years. And they wanted to be clear that that was still the process, in which we agreed. We had never intended to have anything to do with the archiving of the record. So we agreed with them that we would make these changes in 5B and C to accommodate that.
I see. I think that takes care of it, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have don't have the amendment in draft form, so we're going to close public hearing after I ask if there's anyone else who wanted to testify. I believe that this is a good bill, but we need to get the amendment in the proper form. We'll bring it back for a work session soon. With that,
thank you very much.
Was there anyone else that wanted to testify? Not. We're going to close public hearing on Senate Bill 262, and we will bring it back after we get our amendment properly drafted. We have bill for bill introduction.
I believe that's towards the back of their packet.
It's in the back of their packet. I'm going to open the work session for bill introduction. This.
I was going to move it if you want me to.
Would you do that, please?
Sure. I move LC 3590 be adopted as a committee bill from the Senate Education Committee.
I thank you. Senator Deckert has moved LC 3590 as a Senate bill introduction. Education Committee bill introduction.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Senator Fisher.
It talks about the special checking account. What is the special checking account? Is this their main checking account, or do they have some other little deal that they're working on?
Well, sir, I can't answer that question, but I think there's gentlemen perhaps in the back of the room that might be able to.
The reason I say that, if this is a some special little account that goes for special purposes from donations collected from somebody else or something like that, that I wouldn't have a problem with. If they just want to hog their own fund interest, then they don't have any more of a right to do that than anybody else does. I guess that's my...
I understand that we're not in a public hearing on this at this point, but I appreciate your sentiments, and we will would like to have your support to introduce this, not asking that...
You know me, I hate to turn anything loose that I might not be able to control later on.
All right.
If you're in trouble, I'll think it over.
All right. Well, is there any...
And it speaks of the special account, though, and doesn't name a special account.
Yeah.
I get curious.
We will certainly flesh that out before we get along with this bill.
All right. On that strength, I won't have an objection.
All right. No objection? Hearing none, so ordered. We're going to close this work session. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 330. And we have... Jeff?
Yes, sir.
Tell us about it.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jeff Sweetser. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. And this bill is a technical corrections bill based upon passage of House Bill 2993 last session. And this bill is doing two things. One, it's resolving some inconsistencies and ambiguities that were brought about in that House Bill 2993, the changes that it made to our statutes. There were some definitions that were already in existence that the bill brought in similar definitions, but they weren't the same. So we're asking for to recognize that those definitions need to be modified to conform with the definitions that are already used out in the community. And we also are asking for to move those to different sections of our statute so they apply to all of our programs. Very widely used, generally accepted definitions in the community. The other piece that we're asking for in this legislation is to recognize that the U.S. Department of Education changed one of their federal programs and gave it two new names instead of the one. It used to be called the Student State Incentive Grant, and now we call it the Leveraging Education Assistance Program and the Special Leveraging Education Assistance Program.
Questions? Everyone fully understanding what we're doing here. The conforming the statutes. We have common language throughout. Any substantive change, I don't see it.
There is substantive change. Some of the definitions we're talking about are eligible post-secondary institution, financial need, qualified student. These are terms that are widely used and we've talked about before.
I have no further questions. The committee members have any question? If not, we'll close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 330.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we send the Senate Bill 330 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Fisher has moved that we send Senate Bill 330 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none. So ordered. Need a carrier?
I'll do it.
Senator Fisher will carry. Thank you. We have a small matter with Senate Bill 220. It's scheduled for work session only, and I would like to go open a work session on Senate Bill 220. Let Jan tell you why we're contemplating a move of this bill to the judiciary. It wasn't clear to me, just reading the bill, why we would do that, but I think Jan can help us understand why we might want to do that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if you look at Senate Bill 220, there's a change on line 19 that deletes the reference to ORS 183.484 and inserts a new one, 183.482. What those are references to a local circuit court and to the Court of Appeals. The OSAA asked for this bill, and it changes the venue of where their appeals are heard. There's multiple levels of appeal, and the final appeal is currently at the local circuit court level, and they would like to change that to the Court of Appeals level, and it was thought that maybe the Judiciary Committee, who's more familiar with what happens at each court level, might be a more appropriate venue to hear this bill.
Thank you, Jan.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fisher.
Does that not effectively take out one stage of the process and take it directly to appeals court rather than the civil court and then to the court? I'm hazarding a guess here, but it seems like I heard.
I'm not certain. That's another reason why we were going to send it to judiciary, but it sounded like it was in lieu of the circuit court. Right now, if a student is deemed ineligible to place the call, for example, the parents first have an appeal to the OSAA administration. And then they have an appeal to the OSAA board. And then they have an appeal to the superintendent of officer. And then it goes to the local circuit court, is my understanding. Now,
If they go directly to the appeals court, it takes the process out. And I'm thinking that if somebody at the start of football season all of a sudden is told he can't play, it's his senior year, it doesn't do him much good to run this thing through a system that he can't get it through and still play football. That's his last season. So I'm guessing that this is probably a deal to hurry up the process. Several times we've had bills where we've directed it to be taken directly to the state Supreme Court simply because we wanted to get a timely issue or a timely judgment on it and not have to go and fight it all the way through step by step. And I'm guessing that's something that might well be being done here. So I would be glad to turn this over to the judiciary.
I would entertain a motion to move the Senate Bill 220 to judiciary.
So moved.
Senator Fisher has moved that we send the Senate Bill 220 to the Judiciary Committee. Further discussion?
You notice I'm a chicken. I'm not ready to put my name on the line to that. I'm willing to suggest it, but that's as far as I'm willing to go.
All righty. Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Close the work session on Senate Bill 220. We're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 332. And there must be somewhere. Yes, Alan. Want to tell us all about Senate Bill 332.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Alan Contreras, Administrator of the State Office of Degree Authorization, and I'm going to talk to you about what's in the original bill and the two items in the Dash 1 amendments having to do with diploma mills and also how we evaluate colleges and degrees. And if you think there's time, Mr. Chair, I'll begin with a 12-minute video that deals with the diploma mill issue that I think is helpful in understanding what can happen. If you'd rather not, we'll just go.
I think that would be informative.
Okay.
This is from a two-part news story from Channel 12 at 4.
Thank you.
Doctor, teacher, or attorney, but how do you really know that they actually earn their credential?
I-12 uncovers a fake university.
Well, I screwed that up, sorry. You know how to reset it for video?
Yeah. Let the young man.
Huh? If it'll restart itself. I hit the channel button instead of the volume button.
Oh, then you just have the option.
I only hit it once and it just flipped out. On the other hand, Mr. Chairman, maybe this wasn't such a good
per diem increase, Mr. Chair.
Actually, we have to file that workers' a claim because you're working out of class. Unionized.
That's true. I want to get unionized on that.
Doctor, teacher, or attorney, but how do you really know that they actually earn their credential?
I-12 uncovers a fake university selling fake degrees, and wait till you see who's buying. Gary Thomas is here now with the story. Gary?
One of these fake universities has been sending out these email messages all over the country and here in Portland, trying to get people to enroll. Now, some of its graduates claim this university is giving them credit for life experience. But our I-12 investigation shows you don't have to have any life experience at all to get this college degree.
There's a sample of those emails in the packet of stuff that's in my handouts today.
University of Portland with a bachelor's in science. Your baby's all grown up, working the days, and ready to graduate. This year have what we call our millennium bug, class of 2000. It's just a crazy time of year. It's really busy.
All right, this is the nursery.
Not much going on here yet. For John and Vicki Gudgel of Portland, graduation seems so far in the future. But it's not. Huh. John is a photographer for Channel 12.
That's right, I'm buying a brand new, another baby expense.
Oh, it's just been shock. He volunteered their child to be.
Moron police.
For an I-team investigation.
I think the diploma would go right at the head of the crib.
Can we get Lauren Elise a college degree before she's even born? You want her to go ahead?
Oh, yeah.
Why?
Well, I think,
by those things.
Exactly. Take care of us when we're older. We need somebody in the family with a lot of money and education.
You call me University advertising through email.
Harrington University.
They told us they are a diploma mill.
London, England.
Pick your degree.
Bachelor of Science.
Pick your major.
Computer Information Systems.
Pick your grade point average.
3.5.
It's all yours for the right price. 100. 200. iTeam 12 sent them $450 as requested.
And so this is my receipt
via Western Union.
That's it?
Now it's time to wait for both degree and baby.
Yeah, you know, Defender of Justice, Lauren, she's going to help bring the bad guys to their knees.
The first delivery from Harrington University.
Carrie, your package is here, all the way from London.
No classes, no homework, no tests, no stress. Lauren Elise Gudgel is a college graduate.
An unborn child can have a degree before they're born.
Brian Craigerud is not too happy to hear the news.
I just don't think that that's right.
He is close to graduating himself from Portland State University with our degree, Information Systems, and our GPA, 3.5.
Oh, gosh.
But his degree has taken a lot more work.
Then you're up until 1, 2 in the morning getting your assignments done, get a few hours sleep, and then there you go, back to class, back to school.
And a lot more sacrifice.
Shouldn't that be like fraud or something? Shouldn't that be against the law? That's fraud, okay?
It is against the law in Oregon. State investigator Alan Contreras says you can't sell fake degrees here.
Get a raise, get a job, as a credential to attract people.
Nor use them for personal gain.
You can have as many of them as you want, just keep them under your bed.
But iTeam 12 found many Harrington graduates showing off their degrees on the internet. G. Peter Healy says he's a consultant in food safety with a Bachelor of Science in Biology and a Doctor of Philosophy in Education, both from Harrington. Now, meet the man himself.
Almost every year I have projects that I do in Oregon.
G. Peter Healy says Harrington gives credit for life experience, like the 44 years he's worked in the food service industry.
And it is an unaccredited college, but it is a method for advanced degrees for people like myself who really don't have the time to spend 2 to 4 years in another college setting late in life.
Harrington did say it would give us credit for life experience, but when we asked how they wanted us to demonstrate our experience, they said, don't worry, I take your word for stuff.
He works in food safety.
For Alan Contreras, it is no longer funny.
The problem is it's not a joke. The problem is that lots and lots of people go out and get these things and use them.
He sees G. Peter Healy as a prime example of why fake degrees are dangerous.
Would you want your house designed by an architect with a fake degree? Would you want your child treated by a pediatrician with a fake degree? You know, people designing bridges and roads with fake degrees? That's why it's important.
Okay. Congratulations.
And then there's that final delivery. Lauren Elise Gudgel, just 1 month old, perhaps preparing her commencement speech.
What do you think?
Oh, yeah.
Just one small problem. Lauren Elise turned out to be a boy, Joseph Allen Gudgel. Now the Gudgel's first child will have to earn his college degree the honest way.
Maybe your sister.
Now we'd like to show you what we got in our package for $450. We have this diploma, but there's a lot more. You get transcripts listing every class you took and the grades for each one. Plus, you get letters of recommendation from professors. They give you an email address also, so that you can give people who want to hire you that email address, along, of course, with all this other stuff. And Harrington University will confirm that you actually went there.
The complete package.
Amazing.
Yes. And we understand there are other schools out there, much like Harrington. How tough is it for police to kind of get a handle on the situation?
Well, they say it is really hard because these places move around. They'll shut down and move to a new place, and they'll change their name. So Harrington University soon may not be Harrington University, especially after this story airs. Also, the laws are different in different places. So they say the best advice is to make sure you check things out. Make sure the people you're dealing with are telling the truth.
Fraud.
Yes.
Great story. Thanks.
Everywhere.
Well, tomorrow night, how can you make sure you don't fall for these tricks? Make sure the people you're dealing with have real degrees? We'll have that story on the 10 o'clock news. If you need help, give iTeam 12 a call anytime, 736-0412. You can also email us at it12@kptv.com. Fake universities are looking for new recruits here in Portland to sell them bogus diplomas. How can you avoid getting scammed by these pseudo-students with dummy degrees? I-Team 12 investigates. Here's Kerry Tomlinson.
Check this out. This looks pretty real, but it is a bogus diploma. Now, selling this or using this to get a job in Oregon is against the law, but that doesn't stop people from doing it. Don't be fooled. Tonight we'll show you how to uncover these fake students before they take advantage of your trust.
Harrington University.
The degree looks quite impressive. Hard to believe. This Bachelor of Science in Computer Information Systems belongs to a baby just 1 month old.
Take that to your job interview.
John and Vicki Gudgell of Portland will tell you their baby is smart. But smart enough to pass all these classes. You know, I'm really just planted in this bee, earn all these grades.
I'm confident that Lauren has a bright future in.
And receive all these letters of recommendation.
Sincerely?
Not yet.
Then you're on your way.
I-Team 12 bought the Gudgell's baby a fake degree from a fake school, Harrington University of London, England, to show you how the scam can work.
How much for two? I think that covers the situation with Harrington pretty well.
How can you make sure you're not getting tricked? State Investigator Alan Contreras with the Student Assistance Commission offers advice.
Why do they go and acquire these mystery degrees? And the answer is usually money. Professional advancement. They hope nobody's looking. Now, I'd say it's unfortunate, but a lot of it happens.
If you want to hire someone, check with the school to see if they really graduated.
Well, he has a couple of Harringtons.
But in this case, Harrington has set up email and a phone line. Confirm that its students did indeed receive their degrees.
Here's the I haven't been to class yet as they're standing in line.
You may also want to check to see if the school is accredited. But another warning, some fake schools have fake accreditation agencies to back them up. Check with the federal government to see if the accreditation agency is real.
More Harringtons.
And finally, don't trust slick packaging and impressive documents. This food safety consultant from Tennessee doing work in Oregon has a BS and a PhD from Harrington.
We just can't have people running around with credentials that they haven't earned because of the damage they can do.
Don't worry about this baby.
You can buy that boat now. Is that a thing about college education?
The Gudgells have decided to stick with real books, real schools, and real learning. Now they just need to start saving real money.
It's not so much just to have the piece of paper, it's to actually have the education behind it.
Absolutely. You know? And the smarts that comes along with it.
Sure.
Now, the man we interviewed that you saw in the story is from the State Office of Degree Authorization, and he is known as the Degree Cop.
Only
so
by her.
If you have trouble finding out the truth about a degree, and you've done the search and the investigation, and you still have trouble, you can call him, and his job is to investigate.
And if he catches somebody using a fake degree, what's he going to do?
They can do several things. First, they'll write that person a letter, and they'll say, stop using that fake degree. They can also send the person to the Attorney General's office for a little chat. And if that doesn't work, they can take them to the courts to be prosecuted. But what they tell us is most people, when they're found out and that letter goes to them, they say, not going to do it.
Not worth it.
Not worth it. Now, Kevin wanted to give you something. We have this large size degree that we got from Harrington University, and they also gave us a wallet size.
Oh, good.
Would have had
it. Thank
to
you.
Use when you're out on interviews.
Bachelor of Science in Computer Information.
That's right.
For sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that gives you some idea of one of the kinds of things we deal with at the Office of Degree Authorization. I'm going to not go over everything in your packets. I think you can look at those. If you have particular questions, feel free to contact me. I'll talk a little bit about what's in the original bill, Senate Bill 332, and why we put it in there, and then the Dash 1 amendments that I think you have in front of you. It is true that we can refer people to the Attorney General under the Unlawful Trade Practices Act, or we can refer them to district attorneys for criminal prosecution if they use degrees for some of these illegal purposes. The problem is that the Unlawful Trade Practices Act can only be used in certain circumstances, and criminal prosecution is a rather big hammer to use in some of these situations. And in neither case does our office have any control over which cases are pursued and which ones are not, really. So what we wanted to do at the recommendation of the Attorney General's financial fraud people is to add a provision to the statute, which is 3A here in the original bill, that would allow the Student Assistance Commission to request an injunction to prevent people from using these degrees in circumstances when we thought that was appropriate. They've also added fining authority here, which I doubt we would use in most circumstances, although it's helpful to have in there just to give people an idea that we're serious. So that is where that language came from, and that is the purpose for which it is in there. The Dash 1 amendments, there are two items that came up in recent months that we could not get pre-session filed in the original bill, and I'll take a moment and explain what they're for. I'm going to look at the second one under Section 2 first, the new language under Subsection B, which reads, authorize approved degree-granting schools to offer non-degree programs leading to a certificate or diploma. In 1997, when the original statute for ODA was passed and when the statutes for the Oregon Career Schools Office were amended, my office got the authority to deal with degrees, degree programs. The Career School Office has the authority to deal with anybody that offers certificates or diplomas that does not also offer degrees. Everything from barber colleges to computer schools that are certificate and diploma operations. The problem is that some degree-granting institutions also offer certificates, and those have fallen through the crack here. That would not be a really big issue because there are not very many of them if it were not for the fact that students want to use veterans benefits to go to some of these programs. In order to be able to use veterans benefits in these programs, these certificates, the federal government requires that the state issue a letter of authorization for the certificate program saying it's legitimate. Right now, it isn't clear that anybody has authority to do that. As a consequence, my office has been handling these on sort of an ad hoc basis, but it is certainly not clear that the statute permits us to do that. It's a little glitch, I think, from 1997. And so at the request of the State Veterans Authorizing Office, we're asking you to approve the language that's under sub B here so that we can deal with these situations and not leave people hanging out there. A lot of these are computer training programs and things like that. The other addition in the Dash 1 amendments is up there at line 5. It says after line 13, insert. And then there's some other language there about programs meeting standards of academic quality. The current language in the statute from 1997 says that if you have a degree from an unaccredited institution that is not approved by my office to operate in Oregon, it's illegal to use it, period. And that's pretty much all it says. The problem we've run into in at least three different situations in the year and a half I've been in this job is that there are some, a very small number, but some unaccredited institutions that are not diploma mills. They are legitimate educational experiences, and right now there isn't any mechanism available to my office to help an individual, to say to an individual, yes, you can use that degree, because we've evaluated it and we've determined that the institution is legitimate. If it's unaccredited, then there isn't any way that I can do that. This language is intended to permit us to look at those rare situations and evaluate an institution as to whether it would meet our basic standards and permit the individual to use their degree. We're trying to screen out this kind of thing, these low-end mail order houses and that sort of thing, but we don't want to say that anybody that's unaccredited is a fake degree, because that is not really true. And those are the three items that we have in this bill and the Dash 1 amendments, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions? All
Can you give us some examples of the non-accredited degree offering institutions that really are granting degrees? The last
certainly
category.
There are two that I know of now already. One of which my predecessor evaluated, Dr. David Young, shortly before he left this job, and one of which I've had occasion to look at. Those being the University for Humanistic Studies in California and Bob Jones University in South Carolina. There's a third institution, California Coast University in California, that has a lot of graduates in Oregon who would like to be able to use their degrees, and they've expressed some interest in enabling that to come about. I've not evaluated them yet, so I can't tell you for sure that they'd be in that category. But that's the kind of place that we're talking about. It's a California-licensed institution, and it's not just a mail-order house. We would like these places to be able to have their graduates use their degrees in Oregon if they seem to meet the basic standards that we would expect of a degree.
Now, the two illustrations that you gave that have been evaluated, are they recognized then as having a degree program that could be recognized in the state under the examination that's been made?
In my opinion, they both would be. I can't say for sure about California Coast. In each case, they are operating legally in the state they're located in. They have other approvals and licensures. For example, Bob Jones has a nursing program, an aviation program, teacher ed things that have been licensed by the state and the FAA, respectively. There's simply no reason to treat an institution like that as a diploma mill. That's not what it is.
Okay.
These aren't fake degrees.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fisher.
In some ways, I'm loath to even bring this up. There's a situation now that hasn't been mentioned that is in a court case. Concerns one of the institutions mentioned in a degree program not mentioned, where even though those others that are mentioned have been allowed, and the one that wasn't mentioned has been allowed to be the basis of master's degrees of University of Oregon and everywhere else for years, this is an issue that's in court right now. And I think that we ought to be extremely careful in getting involved in doing anything that would do in any way mess up an ongoing court case that has caused some real financial and mental anguish to a very good fine citizen of Oregon, at least one citizen of Oregon, if not 40 or 50 others.
Well, that does make me nervous.
I can address that if you'd like, Mr. Chair.
You can address that.
Okay. I'm familiar with this case because it came up last spring and it's been ongoing more or less since then. There is absolutely no doubt in my mind that the individual in question and the program that that individual came out of could meet the standards that would be established under this provision. I have looked at the faculty in that program. I have looked at the curriculum in that program, and I don't see that there's any problems with it.
This legislation would not in any way affect the outcome of litigation that's ongoing?
I don't know the answer to that. That's a question that you'd really have to ask the Attorney General's people. I can tell you that the kind of issues that came up in this case and that came up last year in a different case involving a different individual at a different institution are going to be fixed by this legislation. This is the kind of situation that we don't want to have coming up. It is a real problem. And my intent is to make sure that it doesn't come up in the future, because there's no reason for people coming out of those institutions to get dinged just because they chose to go to an unaccredited institution that's legitimate.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fisher.
I might just make one add that I have seen a letter under
Mr. Contreras' signature that said basically what he said, and then went right ahead and said that your degree has been denied. And it has caused a person to lose a potential advancement to chair of a department. On having to take an inferior job. I've been approached by the attorneys for this person and asked, because I had legislation in that would have done this and then some, or was thinking about putting it in, and I was asked not to put it in until that case had been decided, because it has a great financial potential burden on this particular individual. Yeah, and I think that we ought to be very, very careful about entering into something where we would interfere in this process, where a judgment has been made, and it was made strangely initiated within days after a certain political person made a visit to this particular institution.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you. What I need here is some help, if you will.
Sure.
A question has been raised here by Senator Fisher about a case that may or may not be affected by this legislation, and the problem is that I haven't heard a clear description of what that case is. What is it about? So there's no context.
Sure.
We're talking in vague
uh-huh.
generalities, and if we are going to be considering whether something we may do will have unintended consequences, we need to hear something uh-huh. more definitive about the case. What is it?
And I'd be glad to tell you that. And the situation that Senator Fisher describes is regarding this case, and the reason that my letter to the individual said that she had to stop using her degree is that the statute allows me no other choice, and that is what I'm trying to fix. Right now, anybody from an unaccredited institution is prohibited from using their degree. It's not within my authority to permit them to do so. The individual in question was using 2 degrees from Bob Jones University in South Carolina, and I spent some time looking at this situation and did everything I could to permit her to continue using them under a sort of restricted regime. The problem is I can't go any farther with the current language of the statute, not only for her but for anybody else, because it simply says if you have a degree from an unaccredited institution, it is not valid in the state of Oregon. And I don't think that's right, and that's why I brought this language in.
Mr. Chair, there's good evidence that even I believe Harvard was not accredited for years. There's been no attempt to go back and tell all of these people that have Harvard degrees from years back that have gone on to other degrees and one thing and another that they can't. It's, as I say, rather strange. The timing of it is really interesting. There are dozens of Bob Jones degreed persons that have come here and had those degrees accepted in times past that have gone ahead and got master's degrees in education at the U of O. I have 2 constituents that are very good friends of mine that I know, and both of them have been in this situation, were teachers for years. Nothing was ever done, nothing was ever said, yet this case pops up, zingo, and only this case. And not only that, it was in trying, apparently, and it looks like to avoid being in court after the judgment was made, at first they couldn't even speak of having the degree or any reference in any public statement or anything else without having all this jargon that you have to do to disclaim the fact that this was not an accredited college. And then it was finally, I believe, moderated so that at least this person can speak about it, but can't have it on any kind of a card or anything else without having some kind of a written disclaimer. And to me, this thing needs to go through the court, and a decision made before we sit down and do anything to add further damage to what's been done already.
Mr. Chair. Well,
Senator Castillo.
Thank you. So, Alan, are you telling us that this bill will have an effect on a pending court case?
I don't know the answer to that. I know that it will have an effect on any person that is in the same circumstances as this individual was in. The law that we're referring to here has only existed since 1997. That may be why it was never applied to anybody in the past. The problem right now is that from now on, I don't have any choice but to prohibit the use of any such degree. That's what the law says right now, the 97 law. So setting aside for a moment the outcome of this individual's case, and I don't know what the effect would be, anybody that's in that situation, and I know there's one other individual who teaches in Oregon who is in this situation with a degree from a different institution that I've also sent a letter, they're all frozen out under the wording of the 97 statute, and which I think is a mistake, and that's what I'm trying to fix.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Castillo.
And so would you say that this bill is the result of an independent effort on your part to deal with an issue and is not connected to any pending court case that we have?
It's connected in the sense that the issues are clearly related to that individual's situation and to at least one other person's situation. So I can't say that it's not connected, because if it weren't for the wording of the statute, this case would never have come up, the court case. What I'm trying to do is make sure it doesn't come up again, because the language that was passed in 97 has this funny little gap in it, and there is nothing that I can do in the regulatory scheme to help people out in that situation. And anybody else coming out of Bob Jones or the California Humanities Institute or California Coast or any place else in the future is going to be in exactly the same situation, because the current statute says those degrees are invalid, period. I will have no choice but to send them the same kind of letter and say you can't use it.
Yeah. Mr. Chair. The interesting thing is this did not start in 1997. This was an established teacher that has a good teaching record and has been so for some time. And it erupted somewhere about March to February, February to March, long in there, of 2000. And as I have been talked to by the attorneys for this person, somewhere in a neighborhood of 40 folks that they know of that are basically being affected by this right now that are involved, and they haven't made an definitive and exhaustive study. And I just frankly think that a snap judgment was made, a tail is in a kink, and I'm not ready to unkink the tail before we get a chance to take this thing through to the finish in a trial where there's been a lot of money and a lot of expense and a lot of hurt and anguish already taken place. And my feeling is there's enough laws in this place that are bypassed for a little period of time until a court case can be decided. It's not going to hurt to let this go. I don't anticipate that with all the things that have gotten stirred up over this particular case, we're going to see just a whole bunch of this thing pursued until it's done. I don't think the Attorney General wants to be fighting on 15 or 20 different fronts on this thing. So my feeling is that we're not hurting anything if we leave this go and let a trial go. There's a chance that that trial will be over prior to the end of the session, and then we can do something about this anyway.
Thank you, Senator Fisher. Senator Gridley? And then Senator Taggart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, what are your thoughts about the appropriateness of the bill being in this committee as opposed to being heard in the Judiciary Committee?
I am. That's a good question. There is that legal aspect, I think, as far as recognizing an approval of degrees, that is well within the purview of the Education Committee. That there's a trial that has been initiated because of the statute that we're looking at, I don't think takes it out of our committee either. So I think at this point, my desire would be to hold the bill until we've gotten some letter from the Attorney General's office. Until we are satisfied that what we're fix that we're doing is really going to help and avoid future cases like the one that's in court now. That would be my desire. Senator,
I'm still. I appreciate your response. I'm looking at the letter that Mr. Contreras sent to you, Mr. Chair, dated January 29, 2001, and I believe that all the committee members have the letter in their bill file. And the first sentence indicates that the bill was prepared prior to the session with advice from the Financial Fraud Section of the Department of Justice. And then in the third paragraph, there's the statement that the principal purpose of the bill involves law enforcement. And with that said, it just seems that we're struggling here with some issues that I'm not an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not aware that there are any other attorneys sitting on this panel. That's not a bad thing. But there are some attorneys over on the Judiciary Committee, and I'm just wondering if the bill and the intent and the facts and the case involved would be better heard, better understood in another committee. That's just a question.
Let's take that under advisement. And
Mr. Chair, just for the record, in answer to that, I have every reason to think that probably the Attorney General would like to get his tail out of this crack right now real easily, especially since there have been many, many times in the past, during the 8 years that I've been here, that an Attorney General has overlooked an aspect of a law that we've done that wasn't quite right and allowed it to go the 2 years until we could get back and change it. I myself was involved with that in my freshman session when I couldn't see why we had to visit the law that allowed us to slaughter an animal for eating purposes every single time that people decided they wanted to eat horses or something else, a bison and buffalo, and we had to revisit that law every time, and I didn't see any reason. So when we had to revisit it to put bison in it in 1993, I said, let's do every living creature instead. Then if they want to eat grasshoppers or whatever it is, they can just do it as long as they're slaughtered under a proper manner. Well, we found out that was all right, with the exception you couldn't do sea mammals because the law required them to be investigated and looked at before and inspected before they were slaughtered. And we couldn't very well catch them and investigate them before we slaughtered them, so we had to make an exemption for that. We put it into effect, and somebody totally forgot that fowls were slaughtered under a whole different program of the federal government. So literally from 93, when that bill went into effect, until 95, when we were able to get back, that was my first job as chair of the subcommittee on Ag and Natural Resources, was straighten up a mess that got created. But for 2 years, we were slaughtering chickens and geese and ducks in this state and turkeys illegally, and the Attorney General made no attempt to stop it, and neither did I. I felt bad about it, not for my part, because I didn't know about it, but we got it straightened up, and you haven't had to revisit that, because I did accomplish something by getting at least every living creature other than marine mammals and now fowl, so that we don't have to revisit that. And someday, if they want to eat pet llamas, they can do it, and all they got to do is slaughter them in a proper manner, and we don't have to go back and visit it. But the Attorney General has ways around doing things if he still feels like doing it, and so I'm not one bit persuaded that we need to hurry with this bill.
Thanks. Senator Deckard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just learned that I can legally eat grasshoppers and
sea mammals.
No, you can't. Commercially, unless you get them first inspected
on my
before they're slaughtered, and then expected after during the slaughtering process.
I stand corrected. Mr. Chair, the only my reading of this, and it's somewhat informed by the testimony, is that this in many ways would, and I could be off, but this in many ways would solve that problem, is my understanding and reading of this. And so I like the fact that the situation that might be causing concern, we would now have a remedy for. And so unless, and it's pretty straightforward and pretty brief and pretty narrow, and so unless there's something that I'm not seeing in these two paragraphs, then I think we have, we may just have the solution in front of us, more of a comment than a question.
Now, Mr. Chair, I agree with that. I think we do have the solution in front of us. The problem is it's interfering and would interfere in the opinion of attorneys involved in this case, and they specifically asked me, because this is basically the same thing that I would have authored and had in the mail myself and did not do, because they felt enough involved about it to stop from all the way from Atlanta to Oregon to see me and ask me to not do that. And out of concern for them and concern for my constituent, it's been what I considered very much damaged by the state's stance and being picked out and singled out above everybody else. I think that this needs to be allowed to go through.
Well, thank you very much. Is there anyone else that wanted to testify? We're going to hold this bill, not going to hold a work session today. I want some further discussions, but I think we'll bring it back shortly. And appreciate very much, Alan, your thoroughness in bringing information to us. I believe on the face of the testimony and the bill that it will solve some important problems. And so, again, thank you very much. Yes, sir?
I'd like to testify, but after we've had a chance to see the Dash 1 amendments.
Okay.
So if you're going to bring it back, that'd be fine.
Yeah, we will do that. Thank you. With that, is there any?
Can I vote on that bill that I missed?
Oh, yes. There is a procedure.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we suspend the rules and allow Senator Castillo to vote on, what was it, Senate? What was the number?
Senate Bill 330, I believe.
Senate Bill
330. Mm-hmm. Senator Fisher has moved that we suspend the rules to allow Senator Castillo to vote on Senate Bill 330. We're going to reopen that work session on 330. And how do you vote, Senator Castillo?
Aye.
Senator Castillo votes aye on the moving Senate Bill 330 to the floor. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I turned down sponsoring that gift thing, too.
That's it?
I looked at it. I didn't want anything to do.
We
I wasn't, I would have had
a full schedule the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Weren't very much.
Appreciate your hard work, and I'd like for everyone to get here on time as near as possible.
You already had it figured out.
Would help. That, we're going to adjourn Senate Education.